Well, thank you very much. I'm pleased to be in Missouri. Thank you for your warm welcome. As you can tell from what you've heard, Missouri has not been in the forefront of achieving clean air for its citizens. And so I'm delighted to be here when this particular clean air, clean indoor air bill is being debated in your state legislature. Other things that concern me about Missouri are that anybody of any age can buy tobacco here, and that you have no law that prohibits the display of vending machines where kids can get cigarettes without any help. But most of all, I think, is my concern about smokeless tobacco, which has already been alluded to. It's interesting how in polls most people understand the hazards of smoking, but they don't transfer that knowledge to smokeless tobacco, which has all the same addictive properties and so on. And you have no state tax on smokeless tobacco. And it's very important to know why a state tax is important. A study was done in Texas, for example, that showed that if you increase the price of a pack of cigarettes by 10 cents, 12% of people under the age of 18 stop smoking. Now, it doesn't work the same for older people because they have more of a cushion in their budget. But for kids in high school, when prices go up on cigarettes, they stop using them. And why that's so important with smokeless tobacco is that kids in this state start chewing very early. And when I was Surgeon General, I had a study conducted by the Inspector General among 1,200 high school students and tried to get a feel of what they understood about it. They were amazing. I'll just give you one series of questions. Do you think that smokeless tobacco is addictive? No. Do you think it's habit-forming? No. Have you ever tried to quit? Yes. Why haven't you? I can't. So not even able to transmit the inability to stop an addictive drug. But the dangerous thing about it isn't just a passing fancy for childhood. One of the worst things socially about chewing tobacco or using moist snuff is you've got to spit tobacco juice. Well, you can do that some places. You can do it on the farm, you can do it in the street, but you can't do it in people's homes, at least not most people's homes. And so the time comes when you realize that you've got to get a nicotine fix, but you can't chew, so you take a cigarette. And then you've gone from one bad world to the worst of two bad worlds, and you have all of the problems that go with the cancer-producing aspects of smokeless tobacco to the things that go with smoking tobacco. So Missouri has a lot of challenges, and in a sense that's good. Lots of other states are facing the end of long challenges, and it's always harder to fight toward the end, but anybody who wants to get on his white horse here, he's got big target.
Are there any questions?
Dr. Koop, can your role in the crusade against smoking be more effective now that you are no longer the Surgeon General?
I'm not sure that it can be more effective. I can tell you that an awful lot of the world still thinks that I represent anti-smoking in this country. A lot of them still think I'm the Surgeon General, to my great dismay. I think, unlike some other things, smoking will probably go along about the same way. There are other things that I did in government where, now that I'm free of government constraint, I can be more outspoken than I was, but I've been pretty outspoken about tobacco.
What's your assessment of Secretary Sullivan's attack on the smoking industry sponsoring athletic events?
Well, I've been talking about that for 8 years. I think it's reprehensible because when Dr. Terry's report in 1964, there were some major changes in laws in the United States, and when advertising was taken off television and radio as far as cigarettes were concerned, the tobacco companies had to turn to other methods of advertising and promotion. Free samples and that sort of stuff became the ticket. And now fashion shows, rock concerts, automobile races, sports events, tennis tournaments are sponsored by tobacco companies. In one recent automobile race on television where it is forbidden to advertise cigarettes, the word Marlboro was on the television screen 46% of the 58 minutes that race was being shown. So it is a way around the advertising ban, but also in the promotion of sporting events, they give out free samples. And although the cigarette industry has a self-imposed code that they will not give samples to people under the age of 18, we've tested that out by sending obvious youngsters up who have no trouble in getting a little four-pack of cigarettes.
Dr. Koof, how important is it, do you think, that Missouri passes a law to restrict smoking in public? What's going to happen if it doesn't? Because we've had trouble passing that in the past.
Well, I think it's terribly important that they do. First of all, it sends a message to the citizens of Missouri that their legislature cares about health. It lifts the problem of smoking away from the direct smoker and puts it in the realm of the non-smoker. And although only 50 people died in this state last year as non-smokers from other people's smoke, that's a significant number. You wouldn't want it to be one of your family members. Then there are a lot of things that happen when a state takes an interest in restricting smoking. The first thing is that the people who are in those places where they have been smoking but now can't have an additional reason to try to stop. And remember that over 90% of smokers really want to stop, and they know they're addicted, but it's just darn tough to do. But if you do it in a business or a place where other people are doing it at the same time, misery loves company, and you have somebody to join you in the fight to stop. The next spin-off is that if you become a non-smoker at the work site, you become a non-smoker at home. And if you have children, you definitely advance their health as far as respiratory infections, middle ear infections, and pneumonia is concerned. And the younger your children, the more deleterious is your smoking habit for them. And then you find the next step is that restrictions that were imposed by government are so attractive to business and industry that they go from a restriction to a ban. And when they go to a ban, all kinds of things accrue to those businesses, which are reflected in benefits for their workers. Their absenteeism drops, their number of accidents go, because smokers account for 3 out of 4 accidents in an industrial plant, for example. And then the management finds that a lot of things are cheaper, such as the cleaning bill, the workman's compensation insurance, the fire insurance, and the health insurance. And in the long run, you don't have to pay out pensions as early as you would, because people die later. Now, all of these things are so impressive that whereas 10 years ago at a bargaining table, unions would sit down with management and would be against any smoking ban, now unions introduce it first and they say, you're going to save so much money by having a smoking ban, we'd like some of that to go to other employee benefits. So the tide has turned.
Stated a little while earlier that the increase in price of cigarettes will lower the number of youngsters under 18 who are smoking. Is it your belief that taxes ought to be raised or subsidies stopped? Which would be the most effective way of...
Taxes ought to be raised. If you stop subsidies tomorrow, it would not affect the health of the nation. That's not what the problem is. As a matter of fact, you can make a scenario on... and they're really not subsidies, they're price supports. You can make a case for taking the price supports away that's jumping from the frying pan into the fire. If you didn't have price supports for tobacco, for example, the farmer would have to raise more tobacco to get the same income. Tobacco would be a glut on the market. It would therefore go for a lower price, and you could manufacture a cigarette for less cost. And you can bet the cigarette companies aren't going to pass that savings on to the consumer. And so what you'd be having is more money in the way of profits for cigarette companies that could be used for advertising and promotion. And remember that they spend a couple of $1 billion a year to try to get young people to start smoking. 1,000 people will stop smoking today because they died. Their funerals will be next week. An additional 3,000 people will stop smoking because they were smart enough to do so. So just to keep even in this country, today, the cigarette ads have to hook at least 4,000 new smokers just to stay even. But don't start crying for the cigarette companies, because although the domestic problems of cigarettes are going down, they are turning their attention to world markets, especially undeveloped and developing countries. And although we've beaten them here on their own turf, they have turned to the rest of the world, because that's where their future profits lie.
Thank you.
it seems that you're indicating that the tobacco industry is playing very rough with these no smoking bills. And is it your assessment that it's an uphill fight to get this thing through?
I think it's been an uphill fight in this state because you tried before and you haven't succeeded. And I can tell you that there is more than just losing this battle here for the tobacco industry. When you already realize that 44 states have laws, if Missouri goes that way, it's 45. Much easier to convince the next five to go that way if you've got 45 already there. And when every state is smoke-free in certain respects, that's a tremendous blow to the cigarette industry. So they will fight it as hard as they can. They play hardball, as you might know.
What do you think of the recent proposals by tobacco companies to target their products at young women and blacks?
I think it's absolutely and totally reprehensible, and there ought to be an uprising against it. But it's what you would expect from them. They go after the most vulnerable, and their studies show that the most vulnerable people in this country today are blue-collar workers, minority groups, and young girls. And so they get after them. When I was in the public health service, we responded by targeting for education those same groups. But remember that every time I spend a dollar, they spend $1,000.
This is kind of off the subject, but I don't know when I'm going to have a chance to ask you again. You before have, I think, commented on alcohol advertising on television, on television, and as you know, Anheuser-Busch is headquartered in St. Louis. And I'm wondering, are we ever going to see limitations on beer advertising on television, and if not, why not?
I think you will see this. I debated two constitutional lawyers in New York before 600 advertisers 2 weeks ago, and I made the point, which I think is the only two points I have to make. The First Amendment has been shown by Supreme Court decisions not to protect advertising in the same way it protects free speech. There are certainly two types of advertising that are illegal and are not protected by the First Amendment. One is dishonest advertising, and it is dishonest to advertise beer as being the way to social, sexual, financial, and athletic success. And secondly, it is illegal to sell beer to people under the age of 21, and they are targeting people in the low teens.